Good morning, everybody. My name is Aaron Brooker. I'm a PhD student at Michigan State University, and I'm looking at interseeding cover crops in corn in Michigan. So why we're looking at interseeding is mainly because we want to integrate more cover crops into a grain corn rotation, but there's a limited window in the fall after corn grain harvest to do this because the temperatures get so cold so quickly. And then we want to see if there's a longer period to benefit from these cover crops and get the soil health benefits and the benefits that cover crops provide, if we're gaining any additional benefits if we have these in the ground longer. So research on interseeding has primarily focused on some later timings, a lot of V5 to V7 timings, and these studies have shown no adverse impacts on yield, and they've also shown that cover crops can establish at these interseeding timings. So what we decided to look at is, can cover crops establish successfully when interseeded at the V1 through V4 timings? We also included the V5 through V7 timings, but we're really interested if we could interseed earlier and give farmers a larger window to do this kind of practice. And then we also wanted to look at, are these cover crops becoming competitive with the corn? So we had some different sites in 2015, 16, and 17 at the Michigan State Agronomy Farm in East Lansing, and then the Saginaw Valley Research and Extension Center in 2017. And these were our small plot research sites and the ones I'm going to be focusing on primarily. And then in 2016, we did have some on-farm sites as well. So we seeded annual ryegrass, tillage radish, and crimson clover at 18, 9, and 18 kilograms per hectare respectively. And these seeding rates were based on a survey of cover cropping in Michigan and the Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program. And we tried to pick kind of a middle ground and an economic seeding rate, because these seeding rates that we found were very highly variable. So just to take a look at some of the interseeding on the small plots that we're going to be looking at today, I used just hand interseeders and walked through the plots. We did broadcast interseeding in this project. And then just to take a look at some of the interseeders we have some stuff as small as 6-row interseeders in the top picture, and then we have much larger interseeders. This is a 90-foot interseeder in this picture, and we have a farmer that's using a 100-foot interseeder as well. And for anybody that's not quite familiar with corn, this is just to take a look at, in 2015, we seeded from V1 to V6 corn growth stages, and that's kind of a look at what the size of the corn would be at those stages. And at each of these stages, when we did the interseeding, we applied glyphosate prior to interseeding to kill off the weeds that were there. And then in 2016 and 17, we shifted from V1 to V6 to V2 to V7, and I'll get to why we did that here a little later in the presentation. So for our measurements, we had 2 quarter-meter-squared quadrats permanently flagged in each plot to take our measurements throughout the season. And we took cover crop and weed densities at 30 days after each interseeding. We took cover crop and weed density at harvest, prior to corn harvest, and then we also harvested the biomass of the cover crops and weeds when we did those final density counts. And then from the entire plot, we took our corn yield, and we took photosynthetically active radiation measurements in 2016 and 17, and we have weather data from each of the sites for the Michigan Automated Weather Network. So our data were analyzed using PROC mixed and SAS, and Fisher's protected LSD was used to determine differences at a significance of 0.05. And some of the differences we looked at were percent cover crop emergence for each species and timing, cover crop and weed density 30 days after interseeding prior to corn harvest, cover crop and weed biomass prior to corn grain harvest, and then corn grain yield as well. So for our first objective, we were looking at establishment of annual ryegrass, tillage radish, and crimson clover in these V1 through V7 growth stages. So looking at cover crop percent emergence at 30 days after interseeding, I'll point out first that this graph does not include the 2016 site year because we had some weather difficulties in that year. But on the y-axis, we have our percent emergence, and then each timing is shown on the x-axis. So looking at the blue bars first for annual ryegrass, you can see that the V4 through V7 interseeding timings had the most highest percent emergence compared with the V2 and V3 timing. For tillage radish, this became a little bit more variable with a drop in at the V3 and V6 timings. And then for crimson clover, percent emergence was a lot lower than the other two cover crops, and we had a spike at V5, but overall it was fairly similar and much lower compared with the other cover crops. And to highlight probably what were our best interseeding timings as far as percent emergence, it was probably those V4 and V7 interseeding timings, looking mostly at the annual ryegrass and tillage radish, but also the crimson clover at that V5. And then looking at cover crop density at corn harvest, this was a final density as a percentage of the seeding rate, and the tillage radish was the only crop that we saw significant differences in, and we had the highest percent emergence at the V4, V5, and V7 timings, and then also at the V2 timing, and there were no differences for the annual ryegrass and crimson clover. And you'll also see from the 30-day and comparing to the corn harvest density counts that we did see a decrease in these density counts looking across those, so we did have some attrition. So summarizing emergence, all cover crops emerged at all timings for all site years. Annual ryegrass and tillage radish were always higher than crimson clover. Lack of rainfall was the problem in 2016, and it resulted in lower and variable emergence. And the V1 timing, we didn't include in the comparisons that I showed you today just because we only had the one site year in 2015, but it did have good emergence for all species, but I'll get to why we dropped that. So to take a look across from left to right, we have annual ryegrass, tillage radish, and crimson clover in these pictures. And this is to compare 2015 on the top versus 2016 and just looking at these densities of cover crops. So in 2015 for ryegrass and radish, you can see the density, the biomass are both a lot greater compared with 2016. For crimson clover, we just didn't get emergence, very good emergence any year, and so they don't look entirely too different here. And then this graph shows cumulative rainfall for each site year, and the black bars delineate kind of our interseeding period from the V1 to V7 growth stages. So looking at the blue, green, and gray lines, you can see that for the most part we received increases in rainfall throughout that period. We did receive rainfall. But if you look across this orange line here, we received less than or about 2 centimeters of rainfall during that period, and that just wasn't enough to get adequate emergence. So moving on to the competitiveness of these cover crops with our corn crop. Interseeding from V2 to V7 did not affect corn grain yield. So looking at corn grain yield on the y-axis and at our different timings on the x-axis, comparing with a weed-free treatment that we with glyphosate kept weed-free all season, we didn't see a reduction in grain yield by interseeding at any of these timings compared with our weedy treatment, which was not treated with glyphosate. And then looking at the different cover crops individually, we saw the same thing, that none of the cover crops individually caused a decrease in corn grain yield, where in the weedy treatment we did see that reduction. So competitiveness of cover crops with corn, a recap here. Corn grain yield was not affected by timing of interseeding, nor was it affected by each individual cover crop species. In 2015, weeds were a major issue in the V1 interseeding timing, which is part of the reason why we ended up dropping that timing. It was too early of an interseeding for when we sprayed the glyphosate to get adequate weed control. And then kind of an overview of what I've talked about today. So again, cover crops can be interseeded from V2 through V7 without affecting yield. Emergence in broadcast interseeding in this study was never greater than 30%. So to spend just a minute talking about broadcast versus drilled interseedings, a few people have talked about that earlier, and the speed of interseeding favors broadcasting. You saw those really large interseeders that are used on large amounts of acres. As drills currently stand right now, some of those farmers are not interested in drilling cover crops just because it's not suitable for their operations. So what we want to look at is biomass compared in these two systems, and I did not look at a drilled system, so I can't do that direct comparison. But if we can get similar biomass in a broadcasted system, that's really what's going to matter, and that's what we want to look for. And then weed control in an interseeded system needs fine-tuning for single species and with mixtures. So we need to find out a better way. If we're going to interseed cover crops this early before the critical weed-free period is over, how are we going to control these weeds? So ongoing and future research that I'm currently conducting, are there additional soil health benefits from interseeded cover crops? And how can we, how can weeds be managed in corn interseeded with cover crops? So we're looking at different pre-emergence and post-emergence corn herbicide options to see if any of these are compatible with a single species interseeding and with a mixture interseeding. And then at higher seeding rates, do these cover crops ever become effective, become competitive with corn? So I have a study right now, we're looking at twice the rates that we used in this study, and we're going to be looking at if these cover crops do become competitive. And then, can remote sensing be used to evaluate interseeded cover crops and corn health? And can current corn yield models be modified to include cover crops? So there are some fairly accurate models out there for corn grain yield based on moisture and some other variables, but can we integrate cover crops into these variables? What kind of modifications do they need for a system like this? So with that, I would like to thank you and open up for any questions you might have. Yes. Yeah, so the question was, what populations of corn are we planting? And we're usually around 32,000, maybe a little bit less, down to 31,000 in one of the site years, but yes. Yes. So all of the question was, did where and how did we sample the biomass essentially from those quadrants that we set out? So the only time that we measured biomass in this season was in the fall when we did those final density counts. And we also did separate biomass collections outside of those quadrats in the spring. I didn't get to that today. But those quadrats, just a quarter meter squared, that's where we got our biomass samples from in one time throughout the season. So. Yes?
Regarding the selection of cover crop species, what was the motivation behind using ryegrass?
Behind what, sorry?
Using ryegrass, given kind of potential weediness issues, and potential to develop herbicide resistance. I've heard and seen a bit of it becoming an issue when used as a cover crop and maybe conditions don't allow control at the right time and all of a sudden you've got a problem on your hands. I know it's also very common. I was just curious as to why y'all chose to use it.
Yeah, so the question was why we chose annual ryegrass. There's a lot of talk about weediness issues with that. And the reason we chose it, we were hoping for more shade tolerance compared with cereal rye. I did do a study last year with one of my herbicide studies. It actually emerges a little better, especially in this broadcasted interseeding system under drier conditions. And it's commonly used in our state as well. So.
Great.
Thank you
very much.